Tambhakti Bhava Vyagrinad Asatparam Padishutaru Savasandruva Suti Savaita Daiva Pratipadi Tangiram Daivin Parigyata Paratmanirnaya Tambhakti Bhava Vyagrinada Satvaram Parishutaru Savasang Dhruvasati
Not just one version, come on. Savai tadaiva pratipadidam giram Daivim parigyata paratma nirnaya Tambhakti bhava vyagrinada satvaram Padishtatodu sabasam jubasati Sa Dhruva Maharaj, by certainly, tada, at that time, eva, just, pratipaditam, having attained, hiram, speech, daivim, transcendental, parigyata, understood, Pada Atma of the Supreme Soul. Nirnaya, the conclusion. Tam to the Lord. Bhakti Bhava, situated in devotional service. Abhyagrinat, offered prayers. Asatparam, without any hasty conclusion. Parishuta, widely known. Udashavasam, whose fame? Dhruvasati, Dhruva, whose planet would not be annihilated. Translation. At that time, Dhruva Maharaj became perfectly aware of the Vedic conclusion and understood the absolute truth and his relationship with all living entities. In accordance with the line of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, whose fame is widespread, Dhruva, who in the future would receive a planet which would never be annihilated, even during the time of dissolution, offered his deliberate and conclusive prayers. Responsibly, please. At that time, Dhruva Maharaj became perfectly aware of the Vedic conclusion and understood the absolute truth and his relationship with all living entities. In accordance with the line of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, whose fame is widespread, Dhruva, who in the future would receive a planet which would never be annihilated, even during the time of dissolution, offered his deliberate and conclusive prayers. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are many important items to be considered in this verse. First of all, the relationship between the absolute truth and the relative material and spiritual energies is here understood by a student who has complete knowledge of the Vedic literature. Dhruva Maharaj never went to any school or academic teacher to learn the Vedic conclusion. But because of his devotional service to the Lord, as soon as the Lord appeared and touched his forehead with his conch shell, automatically the entire Vedic conclusion was revealed to him. Does anyone know the shloka that correlates to this statement? Yes, I have it written down here. I'll get it together. Yes, Devi Tara Bhaktir, Tasyati Devi Tadagaro, Tasyati Kyatita Yarta, Prakashanti Mahatmana. Okay. This is only one who has implicit faith in the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic literatures revealed from within the heart. So this point is being made that you may study Vedic literatures throughout your entire life and be able to quote so many shlokas and explain so many things that are established in the Vedic literatures. But unless you serve and have faith in a pure devotee and the Supreme Lord, you will not understand the Vedic conclusion from within your heart. It will all be coming from your head, so to speak. So, Dhruva Maharaj, he is a child prodigy. He has a very unique past. He is a personality who is subject to child abuse. At 5 years old, when, as we all know, living entities are quite tender and emotional and sensitive, he was playing on his father's lap, and his stepmother, in a very cruel way, told him, "Don't even attempt to sit on your father's lap," who was sitting on the throne. Maybe if you go pray to the Supreme Lord, Narayan, and he allows you to take, arranges for you to take birth through my womb, then you will be able to sit on your father's lap, who was on the throne. So he understood that, hey, you know, this, and his father did not object. And he was, you know, he was not embraced by his father, just his father, because he was so attached to this other wife, just neglected him, and he went away extremely angry, extremely hurt, and with a desire for revenge. So here is a living entity, Dhruva Maharaj, with such a state of consciousness, with that mood, he is approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead for revenge. I'll continue the purport. That is the process of understanding Vedic literature. One cannot understand it simply by academic learning. The Vedas indicate that only to one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as well as in the spiritual master is the Vedic conclusion revealed. The example of Dhruva Maharaj is that he engaged himself in devotional service to the Lord according to the order of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. As a result of his rendering such devotional service with great determination and austerity, the Personality of Godhead personally manifested himself before him. Dhruva was only a child. He wanted to offer nice prayers to the Lord, but because he lacked sufficient knowledge, he hesitated. But by the mercy of the Lord, as soon as the Lord's conch shell touched his forehead, he became completely aware of the Vedic conclusion. That conclusion is based on proper understanding of the difference between jiva and paramatma, the individual soul and the supersoul. The individual soul is forever a servant of the supersoul, and therefore his relationship with the supersoul is to offer service. That is called bhakti yoga or bhakti bhava. Dhruva Maharaj offered his prayers to the Lord not in the way of the impersonal philosophers, but as a devotee. Therefore, it is clearly said here, bhakti bhava. The only prayers worth offering are those offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose reputation is spread far and wide. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to have the kingdom of his father, but his father refused even to allow him to get on his lap. In order to fulfill his desire, the Lord had already created a planet known as the pole star, Dhruva Loka, which was never to be annihilated even at the time of the dissolution of the universe. Dhruva Maharaj attained this perfection not by acting hastily, but by patiently executing the order of his spiritual master. And therefore, he became so successful that he saw the Lord face to face. Now he was further enabled by the causeless mercy of the Lord to offer fitting prayers to the Lord. To glorify or to offer prayers unto the Supreme, one needs the Lord's mercy. One cannot write to glorify the Lord unless one is endowed with his causeless mercy. So many places in the Bhagavad Gita, it's stated how anything that we do is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. There's in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's stated, Rasaham apsakonteya prabhasmi sasasuryo pranavasarvavedeshu sabdake purisham nishu. So, purisham nishu, the last two words, Krishna says, I am the ability in man. So, this is how one can execute devotional service in a very, very powerful way without getting proud. If there's some realization that your ability to do anything is coming from Krishna, then you're simply utilizing what Krishna has given you to serve him. And there's no sense of pride because it is not your doing. It is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you can humbly bow down to the Supreme Lord and do something very tangible in his service. And if you actually want to do something very tangible in the service of the Lord, this humble attitude is definitely required if it is going to last very long. We all know the sloka in the Shikshashtika. Trinadapi sunitena, torodapi sahishtana, amanina manadena, kirtaniyak sada hadi. That once you chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, once you be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. So chanting the Lord's holy names, preaching His glories, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, giving His message to others, that's all the same. There's no different. And if one wants to go about it eternally, one has to go about it in a humble state of mind and more tolerant than a tree. No false sense of false prestige can be there in the heart of a devotee if he wants to maintain his status in devotional service. And as we all know, the status of performing devotional service can be lost. It is quite possible. And how is it lost? By offenses. And what are offenses caused by? Not being humble, not being tolerant, desiring false prestige, and so on and so forth. So there's one very nice pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in this regard. There is one Brahmin from South India. His name was Vallabha Bhatt. And he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first of all in Prayag. Rupan and Sanatana Goswami were present there at the time. And he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and was greatly impressed by him. And Lord Chaitanya spoke a shloka for his benefit. He said, Bhagavat bhaktihinasya jati shastram japasta tapa apranasyeva dehasya mandanam loka rajanam. That Bhagavat bhaktihinasya, that person devoid of bhakti, jati shastram, jati means birth in a high caste. Shastram means one who has scriptural knowledge. Japas can pronounce mantras. Tapa, he's performed austerities and penances. Then apranasya deyasya mandanam loka rajanam. It's mandanam, it's decoration. Apranasyeva deyasya, on a dead body. So this birth in a high caste, this having scriptural knowledge, this being able to pronounce Vedic mantras very nicely, and being very austere, and it's without bhakti. It is like the decoration of a dead body. Who cares what a body looks like? I've been to Puri. I mean, so many of us have been to Puri. Right in the middle of town is a burning ghat. And it's just like, you go there, it's amazing. I mean, this is a place to go if you want to see the reality of the material world. You see all these fires, these cremation fires, and you see legs sticking out of the fires. This is what you see. And you can go to the top and there's all these cars, everyone's lining up with there's all these dead bodies in vehicles waiting their turn to be burned. And they're all very gorgeously decorated with all kinds of flowers and chandan and so on and so forth. I've seen it with my own eyes. So is this attractive? So similarly, without bhakti, nothing is attractive. It is a decoration of a dead body. So this Vallabha Bhatta later came in contact with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, when so many of his, at that time, long that time disciples were also present there. And he even glorified the Lord very nicely. He chanted the sloka, Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vininahi Tava Pravartana. That Kali Kalera Dharma, it's in the age of Kali, the Dharma, that's the duty, Krishna Nam Sankirtan, chant the holy names congregationally. That's the duties of devotees in the age of Kali. And then the next line is Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tava Pravartana. That without Krishna Shakti, one cannot give Krishna to others. One cannot propagate Krishna consciousness unless one is empowered by Krishna. So he had this realization, but he had one problem. He had a lot of learning, scriptural knowledge, coming from a very high birth, and he was contaminated by some pride. And he wanted some recognition from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu wouldn't give him it. It's like he was like bucking for position. And Lord Chaitanya's association with all the devotees. And who did Lord Chaitanya have in his association? Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, Govinda. There's a whole list of very exalted personalities, and it just so happens to be a majority of them are Nityasiddha devotees that have come down from the spiritual world. They're actually mainly Manjaris in the spiritual world. So extremely exalted to the utmost, topmost degree of devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. And here this upstart Brahman is coming along and trying to impress Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bucking for some position in his association, so to speak. So what happened? He was, you know, trying for so long, you know, and he was associating with Gadadhar Pandit, and Gadadhar Pandit was tolerating him. Because when someone is in association with devotees, is thinking himself very important, and what he has to say is full of meaning, and he has so much to give to everybody, he's thinking himself like this, it's a little uncomfortable, because this is not the mood of a devotee. This is not trinadapisanitana, torodapisanitana. This is pride. And what happens? Pride cometh before the fall. So one day he comes up to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, I have a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and it is better than the commentary of Sridhar Swami. This was intolerable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, I consider those that think that their commentary is greater than Sridhar Swami to be like a prostitute. And he just turned his back on Balabhacharya. And Balabhacharya was devastated. He was thinking, oh, this, I'm very great. I'm better than Sridhar Swami. So then he went and he was with Gadadhar Pandit, and he forced Gadadhar Pandit to hear his commentary. And Gadadhar Pandit was just praying, you know, please protect me, you know. This so-called devotee is, he didn't have the heart to reject him, like, but he was thinking himself, you know, in a very precarious situation. Didn't want to offend him, but at the same time, didn't like him very much, so to speak. So eventually, this Vallabhabhata, he was not feeling wanted in the association of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And later, he took shelter of the sect of Vishnu Swami. And I don't know if that is Sri Sampradaya or another. It's a different line. And he became a very great acharya. And even to this day, he is worshipped in India and his teachings and so on and so forth, especially in Bombay. And Srila Prabhupada says also I think Nandagram or somewhere in that area of Vrindavan, he's very widely known and has many, many followers. So, but in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's company, he was rejected. Now, it doesn't mean that later he didn't get purified and that his teachings are not bona fide. Bona fide teachings don't mean that the teachings are just correct, because we may, as stated in the sloka I read previously, have so much knowledge of Shastra and be able to tell people what is correct and what is incorrect, what is truth and what is untruth. But it has to be done in a proper mood, full of bhakti, full of love, full of humility, understanding one's position in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if one has that understanding, then he becomes qualified to receive knowledge from within his heart. In other words, there's some realization, there's some vijnana. And Dhruva Maharaj, he was such a fit candidate. He so diligently executed the orders of his spiritual master at such a young age, and in such a wounded condition, subject of child abuse, emotionally abused by his stepmother and father, so much so that he was screaming and crying to his mother, and his mother said, "There's nothing I can do about it. It is true. I'm completely rejected by your father. You will never be able to get on the throne. Your brother will get on the throne, not you, because he is the son of my, co-wife, and she is his favorite. That is true. The only way you will get anything you ever want, it is true, what your stepmother has said. You have to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So then Dhruva, with this vengeance and anger, revengeful attitude, went searching for God in a very, very determined way. Such determination at 5 years old, leaving not just an ordinary home, but leaving a palace where servants are putting on toothpaste on your toothbrush and handing it to you. And then you take your bath and they're handing you a nice warm towel. And you have a nice soft bed to sleep in. And anything you want, you get. All you have to do is mention it and it's there, as far as some kind of a toy or whatever you want that is practically available. So this is Dhruva Maharaj. He's giving up all this and going, walking out of the palace, a little 5-year-old boy. And in those days, people lived, this is Satya Yuga, by the way. It's not that you should aspire to live in Satya Yuga. You can still get abused. You can still have a difficult time, even in Satya Yuga. And you live for 100,000 years, and only 5 years out of that 100,000 years, that's how old you are, 5 to 100,000, quite young. He walked out of the palace, completely leaving all the comforts behind, with fixed determination to worship God. And Brahmanda Brahmate Kone Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Beach. Krishna, from within his heart, sent Narada Muni. Narada Muni instructed him in spiritual life, tested him first, he passed the test, told him to go home, go play, then after you're older, then do this bhakti. Dhruva Samara said, no way. I can't do this. I'm a kshatriya. I'm proud. My feelings have been hurt. It's in my blood. I want to be a ruler. And now that, you know, my father has done this to me, my stepmother has done this to me, I want to get not only a kingdom greater than my father that is going to be inherited by my brother, angry at his brother also. I want a kingdom greater than my great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. I want to show them, you know, who's great and who's like that. Narada Muni, okay, here's what you do. Okay, so he gave him instructions to perform Ashtanga Yoga, an accompaniment with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then we see by the results, as the pastime unfolds, the purifying effect of this sound vibration. Now this Ashtanga Yoga is nothing more than to get the mind focused and on the sound vibration of the holy name. And there's that shloka in the Padma Purana, Nama Chintamani Krishnas, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Purna Sudo Nityamukto Vinatvam Nama Namino. That Nama Chintamani Krishnas, that the holy name of Krishna is the giver of spiritual benedictions. So Dhruva Maharaj is asking for material benedictions, but the holy name gives spiritual benedictions. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha is the form of all transcendental mellows. Purna Sudo Nitya Mukto. It is Kampurna, it is complete. It is Suda, it is pure. Nitya Mukta is eternally liberated. Binatvam Nama Namino. There's no difference between the holy name and the person having the name. So Krishna is non-different than the sound vibration of his holy name. So because Dhruva Maharaj so faithfully executed the order of his spiritual master and worshipped Krishna with faith, all the imports of Vedic knowledge became revealed within his heart, and he never went to school. At 5 years old, he may never have even opened a book. Actually, in Satya Yuga, I don't think that there were books, were there? There weren't books. Everything was passed down orally. It's a little loud. Okay. Anyway, so he didn't have this this culture of receiving knowledge from in a systematic way, however they went about it in the Satya Yuga. He was just a young, and ordinarily, living entities in that age, they took 10,000 years to get perfection. He did it in 6 months. He was so determined. So he practiced these austerities, reducing his eating, reducing his sleeping, reducing his breathing. But in accompaniment with the chanting of the holy names. Not, if he didn't do the holy name, it would have created immense pride, and he already had immense pride. It would have been astronomical, the pride he would have received, without the softening of the holy name on his consciousness. So then, after 6 months, and he was practically, he had reduced his eating, sleeping, and breathing to, and because he wasn't breathing, it becomes so powerful that the universe was, and then having a hard time breathing, all the living entities in the universe. So the demigods went and said, Lord Vishnu, please help us. We can't breathe. What's going on here? You're the one who's in charge of this universe. You're the maintainer. Please, you know, we're having a hard time maintaining our lives here. Could you please help us? So he went and he appeared outside. Dhruva Maharaj was so advanced that he was in constant meditation at that time on the super soul within his heart. And then that Krishna, he appeared in person, you know, outside of his heart, and took away the vision from within Dhruva's heart of him. And Dhruva was like, what happened? Where's Krishna, you know? Where's Lord Vishnu? And then he opened his eyes and there he is. You know, right in front of his eyes. Premandana Charita Bhakti Vilochenayana Santaksadava Hridayeshu Valokayanti. This was his worshipable Lord, Lord Vishnu, right, standing right before him. And here he is, this is where we're at in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here he is, 5 years old, and he's in a predicament. He's like, he wants to glorify Lord Vishnu, but he doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have the education. He doesn't have the knowledge. So then Lord Vishnu, understanding his predicament, he put this conch shell on his forehead, and it, all the conclusions of the Vedas became manifest within his heart. And then we'll be hearing some very, very, very nice prayers. So similarly, as all of us are gaining in years and in time in devotional service, in due course of time, all of us will be asked if to be sitting and giving Srimad Bhagavatam class to others. So many things we'll be asked to do. Go to Chopati or go to Pune. And it's not a light thing. It's not a light thing here either, because you're not only sitting in front of, you know, 70, 80 devotees, but there's devotees from all over the world on the internet, and there's devotees all over Mayapur listening on the radio. And so it's not a light task. It's not something to be taken lightly. But it has to be done in a mood of surrender. If one goes about devotional service in a under the influence of the lower modes of nature, in other words, trying to become very learned so you can impress everybody what a great devotee you are, and so that you get with a desire to get lots of respect and criticize other devotees to make yourself look better than them, you'll become a very lonely devotee, because this is not a devotee. And devotees like to associate with other devotees. And devotees mean devoted. And devoted personalities are very humble. And they're always pushing others up and glorifying them and wanting to remain at the feet of the assembled devotees and serve them. And in this, because of this attitude, the other devotees, they're pushing him up. And there's this competition between devotees of trying, you know, being, they're humble in themselves, but they're being pushed up. They're being pushed to give Bhagavatam class. They're being pushed up to be accept disciples, requested to accept disciples, begged like this. Never a devotee is ambitious, because this is not the mood. This is not a product of the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this material ambition, this corporate climbing, so to speak. This is what is going on in the material world, corporate climbing. So in Japan, one of Prabhupada's disciples asked one of the Japanese businessmen who they were negotiating for printing Srila Prabhupada's books in Japan. It was called Dainippon. And he asked him, what do you expect to get out of your life, so to speak? What is the goal of your life? And so he had a stack of business cards, and he had his business card on the bottom, and he took his business card off the bottom, and he put it on the top. So this is the goal. I want to be the in charge. And this is the goal of the materialists. And the goal of the devotees is the opposite. They want to be on the bottom. They want to be the servant. And in this way, Krishna becomes happy, and he blesses the devotee. And he blessed Dhruva Maharaj, and his mentality completely changed. It completely changed so much that when he went home, he was so respectful to his stepmother and to his father. They were so ashamed of what they had done. He had lost all anger. He had lost all sense of revenge. He had lost all the contaminations of the material world. Completely in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and full of respect and honor for all living entities. And he was so ashamed of his motive, his intent in when he first started performing devotional service, that he, after understanding that, you know, he would get a planet and be in charge of it greater than his grandfather, great-grandfather Lord Brahma. But also, his intent was he had hate towards his stepmother and envy towards his brother. And what happened? His brother was killed, and his stepmother was killed also. And he was so, this is in the Srimad Bhagavatam commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he was so remorseful and ashamed of himself for approaching Krishna in this mood. So similarly, we should also be careful what type of mood we're worshiping Krishna, what type of desires we're cultivating while we're chanting Hare Krishna. Because you can water weeds with the chanting of Hare Krishna as well as your devotional creeper. And if you water the weeds, then they will grow and they will choke your devotional creeper, and you will see yourself also becoming like Balabhacharya, aspiring in the association of devotees to becoming a GBC, to becoming a temple president, to becoming a big book distributor, aspiring to be a big collector, not as a servant, but as a lord. And this will drive you away from the association of devotees. How? The association of devotees will not value your association. And who wants to hang out with people that don't want you around? It's very uncomfortable. It's a very natural thing, actually, what happens when one commits offenses. One loses, not only the devotees lose their taste for you, then you lose your taste for them. And the Supreme Lord loses his taste for you, and you lose your taste for the Supreme Lord. You lose your taste for chanting the holy name. Krishna does not appear in the holy name for you. Kirtanyak Sadahari cannot happen when one is full of pride. So here we have a very vivid picturesque example of someone who was very wounded and approached Krishna with very, very impure feelings and got purified. So many of us are coming from very terrible backgrounds. So many things have happened to us in the past. And the tendency is to kind of bring them to, you know, devotional service. But if you very seriously and very sincerely chant the holy names and serve the spiritual master, serve the devotees, worship the Supreme Lord, you can get over it. So many times, you know, we hear about people, you know, things happen to them. And it's so many, so long ago. Get over it. How to get over it? Yasya Devi Parabhaktir Tasa Devi Tathagata. You very faithfully and sincerely and steadily serve your spiritual master and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead under his directions. So, any questions or comments? It is late. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mataji. She's first, and then you. Just speak loudly.
He's asking, what's the right way to ask for forgiveness when you offend someone? Like, even if someone is like, this is the way you want to close your
heart. What is the correct way to beg forgiveness from someone who you have offended? Correct? Yeah. From the heart. It can't be superficial. It can't be because you've read in the Nectar Devotion that if you offend a devotee or you offend the Supreme Lord that you lose your taste for devotional service and material desires will sprout in your heart. So I was offensive to such and such a person. So then you go, please forgive me, you know, I offended you. Like that. And then just walk away. No, you have to actually, from within your heart, understand that you have done something wrong. It is not, you were under the influence of the lower modes of nature, and you acted very improperly, and you have to touch that person's heart. And so you have to very sincerely beg forgiveness, and explain to that person that you are full of fault. It is my fault, not yours. I'm the one who is wrong, not you. Please forgive me. I'm very fallen. Please don't hold anything against me. I'm trying my best. But I'm coming from a very low platform, like this. And in a very sincere way, ask forgiveness from someone you have offended, so to speak. Actually, there was a seminar given by Bhakti Brihad Bhagavat Maharaj, and he talks about forgiveness. And you can also ask forgiveness for someone who has offended you, which is very, very powerful. You go up to the person who has offended you and you beg forgiveness from that person because you had bad feelings towards them because they had offended you. And I was feeling that you are such a bad person because you did this to me. I'm very sorry for that. Please forgive me. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu? Yes. Yes. Okay. If someone has knowledge without humility, it's very destructive because it creates pride. This is very evident. So it is very important that one develop the proper knowledge. And here in the purport, it is stating, first of all, okay, the relationship between the Absolute Truth and the relative material and spiritual energy is here understood by a student. So, first of all, we have to understand, you know, our relationship with Krishna and our position and the situation in the material world. And then we gain this knowledge and we will understand, because this knowledge is there, that we are very small. We are very insignificant. And that knowledge, spiritual knowledge, is under the control of the internal potency of Krishna. So if you get knowledge, it is by His mercy. And in this way, when you get spiritual knowledge in this understanding, in this mood, then you will become humble, because you'll get more and more realization of your small position and more realization of the position of Krishna, which is very vast and unlimited. Anything else? Hare Krishna. Any other comments? Any questions? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.